It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Wisconsin Policy Forum examines the low pay of public attorneys over the decade as Republican lawmakers promote a plan to boost the starting wage of Wisconsin's assistant district attorneys and public defenders to $36 per hour. Share your thoughts about this workforce. Call in with a question at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Ari Brown is a senior research associate with the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Ari, welcome back to the Ideas Network. Hey, Ari, are you there? Can you hear us? Or is the mute on? We're having just a bit of technical difficulties here with Ari Brown as we look at the Wisconsin Policy Forum report looking at the pay of public attorneys over the decade and looking to boost state lawmakers, looking to boost it the starting pay to $36 per hour. And you can join in the conversation about this at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. And you can share how you feel about this workforce, share what it feels like to be a state attorney and to be a public defender. Or,
great.
Oh, Ari, are you there?
Yeah, hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. So, you know,
great.
Here we are, it seems the governor and the legislature seem to have found some common ground on this issue. Set this up for us. Why do state attorneys need a pay raise?
Yeah, so we looked at kind of going back about a decade, what this has looked like for both assistant district attorneys and public defenders in the state who are on the exact same pay schedule from the state. Currently, the starting salary for those positions is about $56,700 a year. The median pay for lawyers in the state for a comparable position, just, you know, across all positions, including the private sector, is around $115,000. And if you even look at the median pay for the assistant district attorney and public defender positions, it's only about $75,000 an hour. So even at that median level, there's a $40,000 gap between those salaries. When you look at gaps that large, it can just be hugely discouraging for individuals. You know, even those who start out in these positions, they might be leaving after just a couple years to take a much higher salary in the private sector.
When you looked at these numbers over time, you looked at the salaries over time and you factor in inflation over the years, what did you find?
Yeah, so we found that if you look going back to 2012, which is kind of the first year for which we have data, the starting pay for these positions has risen about 15%. Back in 2012, it was about $49,000. It's now about $57,000. Whereas inflation over that same time period has been about 32-33%, so almost double that rate.
Wow.
So even just since 2012, that starting pay has really eroded relative to inflation.
So what effect are these salary levels having on our criminal justice system? What connections can you make?
Yeah, so I think the big item that really stands out here is when we look at the backlogs that are happening in the system. So during the very beginning of the pandemic and over kind of the first year, year and a half or so of the pandemic, you had the court system that was really falling behind. Obviously, a lot of the kind of in-person functionings of the court were taken away for that time period to, you know, in accordance with kind of what the pandemic dictated. In the years preceding the pandemic, you also had, just because of, you know, workload issues and shortages, you had a backlog also building, albeit at a slower rate. That said, if you look at felony cases statewide, in 2013, those were disposed of or, you know, just kind of taken care of over the course of the entire life of the case. In 2013, the median disposition time was 152 days for felonies. In 2021, that was raised to 241 days. Similarly, for misdemeanors, the median disposition time in 2013 was 89 days versus 168 days in 2021. So those backlogs really had were really grown over the time period of the pandemic, but also were slowly rising in the background prior to that. Those have started to slowly decline over the last year or so, but are still well above where they were even in 2018 and 2019.
But the number of caseloads, you know, a case can be more complex than others, I understand. Mm-hmm. But did the caseloads even out over time?
Yeah, so caseloads, you know, generally when we look at this data, don't appear to have changed all that much.
Okay.
They're fairly consistent if you think of, you know, they might fluctuate here and there, but in general, prosecutors across the state are seeing around the same number of cases each year. It's just those backlogs make things much more difficult when it comes to processing those cases, and can really have a snowball effect when it comes to staff turnover. If you have a staff that is facing this kind of giant backlog, there are no breaks. They're constantly having to work through those cases. And the same can be said about public defenders who also experienced that similar kind of slowdown during the pandemic.
And when you look at that turnover, you also have to get new employees up to speed. What did you find there with turnover, amid the great resignation and the pandemic? And did these offices see rising turnover?
Yeah, so when we looked at, we have specific numbers from the Public Defender's Office, statewide. So in each of the 3 years kind of prior to the pandemic, and then also including 2020, so 18, 19, and 20, turnover was about 10 to 11% each year, which is fairly normal if you look at turnover in any sort of public sector job. That rose to 17.9% in 2021, and then again to 20.4% in 2022. That was just for those public defender attorney positions. 20.4%, so that's one out of every five individuals in 2022, which is a very high rate of turnover. Mm. And at the same time, for the Office of the State Public Defender, the number of applications coming in to join as a public defender attorney has dropped in each of the last four fiscal years. It was 355 in 2018. It was down to just 168 in 2022. So at the same time as you have these very high rates of turnover, you have fewer and fewer individuals applying to take those jobs, which was really just adding to the myriad of issues that these positions are having, you know, kind of resolving cases.
Wow. So you're also seeing that shrinking pool of candidates who are seeking these state attorney type positions. So that really also plays into it. Ari Brown is a senior research associate at the Wisconsin Policy Forum, out with this report on low pay for public attorneys and what connections can be made to caseload backlogs. Join in at any point. The number to call in with a question, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The state's powerful budget writing committee, Joint Finance, approves a wage increase plan for state-funded attorneys aimed at alleviating staffing shortages and addressing court case backlogs. Call in with questions, 800-642-1234. Ari Brown with us, senior research associate with the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Let's go to Kevin in Janesville with a question. Kevin, hi.
Hey, good morning. Has any consideration for this compensation package going to include something like writing off parts of student loan debt for recent grads, new lawyers? Give us 5 years and we'll take off X number of dollars of your student loans, maybe entice them into the public sector and take that slightly less salary. Thanks very much.
Kevin, thank you. We've seen that in the medical schooling area. Ari, what do you know there?
Yeah, this is a great question. So I believe, and I don't have it right in front of me, but I would have to go back into the proposal. But I believe that was something, at least in the Office of the State Public Defender, that was proposed by that department, that was not taken up in the governor's budget. That said, we don't have a specific statutory language for the Republican proposal that has come out within the last couple of days. We know that there is going to be a pay raise in there, and that seems like there's going to be at least some sort of bipartisan compromise. Both the governor and the Joint Finance Committee have, both independently put forward their own salary increase. Though that's something definitely that is in the conversation, especially when you consider pay obviously is a huge factor when it comes to considering how much schooling that a lot of these new individuals who are just starting out in the field as lawyers just went through. So I think that's definitely a big concern, and it's something that legislative leaders are aware of. That said, I'm not aware of any specific proposals that are being taken up right now. And as we get more language and a more solidified budget in the coming weeks and months, that's something that we may or may not see.
Okay. And, Governor Evers proposing increasing wages for public attorneys to $35 an hour starting out. Republicans advocating for $36 an hour. So you're looking at annual increase of $16,000 to $18,000 a year. What impact do you see this having on the criminal justice system?
Yeah, so that definitely brings starting salaries much more in line with something that you might see in the private sector. So I think really the big item there is, are, these district attorney offices and public defender offices going to be able to attract individuals who might otherwise take a job in the private sector to join in the public sector and take on that public sector work? With a starting salary increase that large, obviously that does bring things much more in line with the industry standard. So you would expect certainly that even if there is turnover, that happens when individuals are a couple years into their jobs, this might have an effect certainly on attracting individuals to take over those positions. I mentioned for the Office of the State Public Defender how they've seen applications drop in each of the last four fiscal years. With a starting salary increase of $16,000 or $18,000, you might start to see those numbers go back up pretty quickly.
Okay. Juliet in Bayfield called in and wants to know how revocation has impacted caseloads and, like a defendant, revoking an individual and sending them, back to prison.
This is such a good question. I'm actually glad that this was mentioned because we have a researcher on the forum staff is actually working on a broader piece about this right now. I am not super involved in that research, but I can say, just having heard about how that research is going, that Wisconsin is particularly harsh when it comes to revocations, and that revocations take up account for a fairly large amount of individuals that are in the prison system. So that is definitely an issue that we at the forum are aware of. I don't know how much more I can say just because this is not my area of expertise, but that's certainly something that we as the forum are looking at and will hope to publish research on very soon.
Juliet, thank you there. Understudy, talking with Ari Brown, Senior Research Associate at the Wisconsin Policy Forum, looking at some of their latest research. Ari, moving over to the report examining the passage rate of school and local municipal referendums, and in recent years, these have done well at the polls, but it was a different story this spring. What happened?
Yeah, so this spring, we saw that there were 83 school district referenda questions on the ballot, 46 of which were passed, which is a passage rate of 55.4%. I think, a lot of individuals might hear that and say, oh, that's, 55%, that's a majority, that's a pretty high passage rate. It is actually the lowest passage rate for school district referenda since 2010. In recent years, these have been passing at a really, really high rate, reaching as high as almost 90% in 2018. That said, we tend to see lower passage rates in odd-numbered years when there are not, a midterm election or a presidential election on the ballot. And even still, even with passing just 46 out of these 83 referenda, that authorized up to an additional $600 million in school district spending across both operating dollars and capital dollars for things like new buildings and renovations. So lots of interesting trends here. Certainly a lower passage rate than we are used to seeing in the last couple of years, but higher than if we look into kind of the distant past.
We posed that earlier this month to Jill Enderle, State Superintendent of Public Instruction, about this declining approval rate for referendums. And she told us that the state has failed to increase funding for schools as inflation grows. And here's some of what she said.
I mean, those prices have gone up and they just continue to go up. And so our schools are grappling with that and they're having a harder time convincing their community to support these tax increases.
Okay, so things just keep going up and up. What calculus do you see voters making in deciding which referendums to approve?
Yeah, no, this is a really good question. And I think when you look at kind of the broader scope of referenda, going back to 2000, up until about 2011, you had the per pupil revenue limits that the state institutes on school districts increasing. Generally, those were tacked to the rate of inflation. And it was kind of prior to that period of time where you had referenda passage rates that never really got higher than about 60%. And, you know, you had years where it was 50, 40, even 30%. Since that time, the per pupil revenue limit increases each year have not been tied to the rate of inflation. We've even had budget cycles where there's been no increase in the per pupil revenue limit. And so since that time, we've seen referendum rates pass at a much higher rate. So I think that that's definitely a correct read of what's going on. That said, especially in a period of time over the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years, where you've had very high rates of inflation, you're going to have, you know, individuals, voters who look at kind of all of the different items that their property tax dollars go and fund and say, you know, I just really can't afford an increase on that right now. I can't afford, you know, for my school district to take a couple more $1 million and add to their operating budget or do this new renovation, or at least I won't, you know, be personally responsible for funding that out of my dollars. So
yeah, so they're taking a much more critical look at it. Ari, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
Ari Brown, Senior Research Associate for the Wisconsin Policy Forum. We have a link to their reports at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.